Auto insurance can all seem the same until it comes time to use it. So don't get stuck paying more for less coverage. Switch to USAA Auto Insurance and you could start saving money in no time. Get a quote today. Restrictions apply.
USAA. I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Life is a highway. And on it, there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
All right, welcome to Out of the Blue from the Block M Podcast Network, part of the Fan First Sports Network, a podcast that has a bronze statue built in its honor. It's somewhere in Muskegon. Go check it out. I am Jared Stormer of MazeAndBrew.com. With me, as always, is Andy Bailey, my hetero life mate, also of MazeAndBrew.com. Andy, you bare-knuckle jibbo boxer. How the hell are you, sir?
I'm good, man. Happy to be back with you.
Let's pod number two. Excited to do this. We are right in the thick of it, man. It is such a shame that eventually college football must end. The season is way too short compared to like how long basketball is.
I know.
Like, feel like basketball's already been going on for months. I'm talking NBA basketball, and we're like 10 games in. We're an eighth of the way through the season, and yet we have to say goodbye to college football here soon.
I hate it. It feels like, I mean, like it was just today that you're like, this is my favorite time of the year. And that was like a month ago now, where it's like, we're in the peak of October and now Michigan finally has a big game. And it's like, oh, Ohio State's in like 10 days, but it's also like, oh, Ohio State's in 10 days. And then it's like, we're in the postseason. It's like, I know it's exciting, but also sad because the end's in sight.
Yeah, I don't know how we did this when we weren't making the Big Ten championship game and we had that extra game to look forward to. Like, without that, if I were just like a 6-win team, like imagine being Michigan State. You look forward to this whole year and it's like, well, hopefully next year we can make a bowl game. Like, that's got to suck.
And now we're Michigan State's currently the only team that's below 500 in football and basketball in the Big Ten.
Look, I mean, sucks to suck. That's all I've got to say about that subject right there. But maybe deserve it. Maybe deserve it. Maybe look inward, Michigan State, as we look outward at the world of college football and sports world at large. Let's get into some quick hits, sir. Starting here, let's go into Baltimore here, where Michigan will be traveling into Maryland. The Baltimore Ravens head coach John Harbaugh says investigators have already searched Jim Harbaugh's computers and phone and found nothing connected to the Fries and Spies schemes. So pretty interesting. I don't think we had heard that anywhere else, that there had been an investigation and they had actually searched through his personal phone, his personal computer. So a bit of a development that John Harbaugh just casually threw out in an interview last night.
Yeah, so when investigators came to Michigan, the NCAA investigators came to Michigan, it was rumored that they confiscated some things, or just, I don't know if confiscated is the right word, but they took some laptops, tablets, phones, things like that, you know, to investigate. And getting this report from John Harbaugh is certainly encouraging, especially if they could even present some of this at Harbaugh's hearing tomorrow. yeah, that's, I mean, but this is what we expected. This is what we've been preaching the whole time, that it was just this rogue employee doing so much stuff on his own. Like, it wasn't like this mastermind spy. And again, it was funny with Penn State talking about, we changed some signs. We have like 700. It's kind of tough. It's like, do you think Connor Stallions and a bro with an iPhone were breaking down 700 signs and going through dummy signals and what was actually going on? Like, come on, give me a break.
Get out of here with that nonsense. Yeah, they did not find anything related to the alleged sign stealing scandal on his equipment. But my guess is they did find some interesting bookmarks. Now, do you think he has what? He has the Lowe's homepage, maybe like a diagram to a snowblower that he needed to fix, something like that. John Deere probably on there. The lyrics to the Edmund Fitzgerald, a link to that. What else is in Jim Harbaugh's bookmarks?
100% Excel spreadsheets, because he told the Pardon My Take guys a few years ago that he writes everything in Excel because he likes how he can organize it and wrap text and do different stuff. So I'm sure there's some really good like Excel spreadsheets with like meat recipes, you know, breaking down power, like family Christmas ideas. Like, I'm sure it's glorious to behold.
The proper way to deglaze your chili meat, something like that. Also, like his anniversary letter to his wife, all done in Excel.
Exactly, just right next to play diagrams. They're going through it like, what is this? Like the inner workings of Harbaugh's mind, just like on a spreadsheet.
I would pay good money to see what was uncovered on Jim Harbaugh's computer, but there was nothing related to the sign stealing scandal. So we will see this Friday. As we have mentioned before, they will have their day in court. I'm kind of just expecting Michigan to not have Jim Harbaugh moving forward, because nothing has gone according to what would make sense and what would resemble justice. So that's what I'm prepared for. Prepare for the worst, hope for the best. That's about all we can do. Next time we speak on this podcast, we'll know, because a game will have happened.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of in the same boat you are, just like anticipating he won't be there. And it's at least nice that the team has a week to prepare for this now, like to get ready and not just like an hour and a half before the game be like, all right, Sharone, you're up. And it's also like, I was thinking this regarding like Sharone's emotional post-game interview. Imagine how much pressure was on the assistant coaches to be like, the only reason you were good was stealing signs. If you lose, like the shitstorm that would have come onto Michigan, like can't win without Harbaugh, can't win without signs, this and that, and like all of that coming together. So it was such a good chance for the assistant coaches to prove themselves, but I digress. They have this time to prepare, and I think that's everything. Even if it's an opponent like Maryland, just getting some of the more minute details ironed out, like procedurally, game management, and stuff like that.
I'm with you, man. That's why I kind of said half jokingly on the last pod, where I was like, did Sharone Moore run the ball 32 times straight? Like, because it was the right thing to do schematically, or did he do it as like a giant F you, the signs don't matter, we're going to win no matter what, here's our playbook, it's run. So it's interesting. I mean, I don't really know what was going on with that decision, but it was beautiful to behold nonetheless. Yep. And agree with you that there's nothing we can do now but prepare for the worst and hope for the best. We've got Maryland this week, luckily not Penn State, and Maryland got absolutely waxed by Penn State. Transitive property doesn't exist, but at least you have somewhat of an idea of the kind of opponent we're downgrading to this week. We will talk about Maryland later in this pod. Let's keep it going, sir. Quick hit I wanted to touch on: football guy Dan Villari, 154 yards on the ground for Syracuse, program record for rushing yards by a tight end. Michigan apparently let one get away with Dan Villari, a guy that we saw sneak previews of, little hints, little tidbits here and there, but never got to see the full package. Killing it for Syracuse right now. Seems like your type of player.
I like Dan Villari. I won't say we let one get away, because Syracuse is 11th in the ACC. So it's like, there's a reason he's getting this opportunity and these touches. But no, man, it's good to see. He was a serviceable backup quarterback. You know, I mean, no hate to throw his way. Glad to see he's having some success, albeit on a terrible, terrible team.
Just seems like something that Harbaugh would have capitalized on, the move from quarterback to tight end and then using that converted tight end as like a running back, essentially. Like, I just like the schematics of that.
It's like if he played tight end at Michigan, though, you already see the problem.
Right. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, he's not going to make it to tight ends. It's tight end number three at Michigan. Max Bredesen clears him. But very exciting for Dan Villari. All right, here's one for you. Quick hit. Don't really want to dwell on this too much because I'm not sure that it means anything, nor do I think it's going to last. But the leaders in points off the bench currently in NBA, and props to Matt Hartwell for finding this, Tim Hardaway at number one at 17.6. Number two, Caris LeVert. 17.5. We were talking about the NBA players to keep an eye on this season. I didn't even mention Caris LeVert as a Michigan player in the NBA. I kind of thought his time was done, but good for him finding a role with the Cavs and really filling it out well. And Tim Hardaway Jr., just like I would think maybe a last gasp, but these guys have found roles as bench scorers that maybe that's where they belong.
You know, I'm a huge Luka Doncic fan, so I've been able to watch a few Mavs games this year, and I love the role he's kind of carved out here. I like him coming off the bench. It's kind of like an energetic boost at times because we've always known Hardaway could fill it up. It was just kind of trying to find some consistency, and he seems to, like, although the minutes have, like, regressed for him from what he's used to, like, he's really thriving in this position, like, kind of a leader off the bench. He's a savvy vet at this point in his career. I love to see it, man. I never thought he was going to have, you know, more than, like, 5 or 6 years in the NBA, but he just continually defines a role, stick around, got a big payday already, so he's not as worried about that. So I've really enjoyed watching him with the Mavs.
Yeah, it's a great, great fit for him. And playing with Luka Doncic, like, sometimes I think, man, is that very fun? But if you are just content with taking catch and shoot threes and cutting to the basket, like, he's going to find you. And yeah, I would think that it could really help your career and help to extend his career, in this case for Tim Hardaway Jr. So good for those guys. Franz Wagner, still the best of the bunch, but I like to see that. And number one and number two, both going to the University of Michigan. So that's pretty neat. Let's stick with basketball, and maybe more than a quick hit here, because the Michigan Wolverines 3-0. In college basketball after an 89-73 win over the Rick Pitino coach St. John's Red Storm. Did not know they were the Red Storm. That's a weird name. But nonetheless, 3-0 moved up to number two in the Big Ten in the KenPom rankings behind only Purdue when they were picked, 11th in the Big Ten coming into this season. So the tide has shifted dramatically. The opinions on this team, the level of excitement is clearly coming up. Were you able to watch that game, and what were your takeaways from this team?
Yeah, I mean, you and I got off the pod earlier this week and were able to catch a little bit of the first half and all of the second half. And the point remains the same. This team is fun. They're energetic. They're up and down. They're athletic. They're versatile. Just completely different from last season, which is last season was one of the single worst Michigan basketball viewing experiences of the last 10 years. I mean, it was just awful to watch. It was clunky. It was slow. You go through 8-9 minute stretches, not scoring a basket, just the worst kind of basketball in a time when it's supposed to be spread out. No, man, I've enjoyed it. The win, like 16 point win, doesn't justify how dominant they were in this game. Like, it was not close at all in the second half. They just kind of put their foot to the throat, finished the game off, and got another nice non-conference win. And that was something that really eluded them last year. I mean, you think back to losing to Central Michigan at home, like, those days are long gone. This was basically a road game against Pitino, and say what you will about that guy, he can coach him up even in his first year. So a good solid win for a young team.
Yeah, doesn't have healthy skin, Rick Pitino. Definitely looks like some type of jellyfish lying dead on the beach. But
who is wearing Rick Pitino's skin?
But that creep can coach, man. And yeah, you're absolutely right that the score 89-73 doesn't properly represent just how dominant this was. Doug McDaniel leads all scorers, was just a flamethrower. Also, seven assists, six rebounds, was perfect from the free throw line, 2 of 6 from three, but the 3-point shot looks good. Yeah. It just looks like one of the better Michigan point guards. I'm extremely excited to see what he could be. And he's on the shorter side, but Michigan makes up for it with a lot of length everywhere else. Namari Burnett went off in the first half of this one, which you and I didn't get to see all of, but saw the highlights. And being 6'4 at the two guard and being able to shoot, he was 4 of 7 from three in this one. I just like what they've built. And as much as last year should have worked with the players that we had and the talent that we had there, it just didn't. And for some reason, this does. And I'm excited to see this iteration of Michigan basketball. The level of fun has just gone dramatically up. And I mean, if we're able to do this against St. John's with Kamwa, who I still think is our best player,
I think so too.
with him not having a great game, like very encouraging. And I'm excited to see where this team goes.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about Doug McDaniel's development, but also Terrence Williams. Look at, this is where he should have been last year. This is why we were so disappointed. Like, the 3-point shot looks so much better, just looked more consistent, more fluid, more fundamentally sound. Team gets up and down the court. Anybody can be your best player on a given night. I feel like they can switch pretty comfortably 2 to 5, even with McDaniel at the one. Just, you love what they can bring to this team, and you can see the potential. Like, they're just growing, they're getting better, and there's a ton of room to go. I can't wait to see what they do once they get into Big Ten play.
Absolutely, man. The level of watchability through the roof. So if you haven't tuned in yet, I highly recommend that you do. They're having fun out there too. Here's a quick little question for you. Something that you threw my way off air. Should Phil Martelli just be the coach?
I knew it was coming. it's certainly seeming that way. So shout out a listener, Siobhan. She's an assistant coach up at Malone. And she was saying that Martelli, like, with in-game stuff, is just kind of clears Juwan with certain things, certain aspects. But I mean, also I was talking last night that do have to give Juwan credit, because this is his team and he made some necessary changes, like fundamentally, schematically, with the recruiting, with transfers, everything. So it's like, it's going to him, definitely not going to write him off yet. I want to see him get back with his team, but like, come on, Phil Martelli took St. Joe's to the Elite Eight and lost to an Eddie Sutton team. Like, he was a elite head coach. He's a reason Juwan brought him in here to be his right-hand man to help carry out. So that shows a sense of security with Juwan that I like. So let's get him back in there, see if he can continue to grow as a head coach and reach, like, kind of where Martelli is with these years and years of experience. But, like, it's something to monitor right now for sure.
Just don't be afraid to lean on old Phil there if the going gets tough. You know, you got him there, and things look really good under Phil Martelli right now. So that's a resource. Let's utilize that.
Phil is so funny. In his post game, he was talking about certain things. You can tell he's kind of like reading a box score, and he's like, this many turnovers. That's unacceptable. I mean, that is just unacceptable. And it's just like, you can see the switch flipping him. Like, he looks like this kind of like paternal grandfather on the team, but it's like, he's still got that dog in him. Don't be fooled.
Oh, yeah, I would not want to fight Phil Martelli. Seems like a guy that would take his belt off to fight you. And it's like, uh-oh, what are you doing with that? And then he just starts whipping you with it.
You don't see Ryan Day calling him out. I mean, Phil Martelli's kind of like Mike Ehrmantraut in Breaking Bad. It's just like, he's a little bit on the older side, but you don't want a piece of him.
You don't mess with that dangerous old man, Phil Martelli. Guy knows Italian food and college basketball, and that's it.
That's all he cares about.
All right, sir. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we've got a little Maryland breakdown for you. We'll touch on the Skins game and more. Back right for this.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
All right, sir, let's keep bouncing around. Let's touch Skins game here. You coming back on me a little bit here. Obviously, I took the JJ over the Blake Corum. That wasn't going to pay out in the Penn State game. So what does that put us now since the redraft? What are we at?
I think we drafted.
Should be 2-2, right?
I think we're 2-2, yeah.
We're 2-2. So you've got the Corum touchdowns, which won it for you today. And you also had Will Johnson scoring some points for you. Rod Moore got me a point, and Blake Corum rush yards got me 2 points. Not great. It's not a great showing for the boys on my end.
I think you're going to have a chance to really come back this coming weekend, because the way the receivers were underutilized in this Penn State game out of necessity, I think a big one could be coming back your way. But that said, I guarantee there's also going to be a concerted effort to keep getting Blake Corum touchdowns as he approaches the A, single season record, and B, the all-time Michigan rushing record.
Six away. Crazy. I mean, insane, man. We're watching history. So been enjoying that nonetheless. Big fan of the Skins game. We're going to keep doing it, even if we don't spend a lot of time on it on the podcast. Just know that in the background, we've got it going on.
Maybe we could also, like, you know, once we get like into December and there's potentially a Michigan football break there for a little bit, we could come up with a Skins game for basketball and hockey a little bit towards the end of the season.
Hello, you've piqued my interest. You had my curiosity. Now you have my interest.
Yeah, we could like find some value for like threes, percentages, or something like that. Just a, you know, little fun side thing going on.
Yeah, Yusuf Kiat's going to be my my deep sleeper pick. Although, my God, I saw Yusuf Kiat handle the basketball. I might have to abandon the island. I might have to leave.
Like we, you and I were texting the other night. Like, we're still on Yusuf Kiat Island, you know. We talked about him a lot. But we're definitely sending smoke signals to passerby. Oh, yeah. We're building rafts, you know, trying to rope some sea turtles. But, yeah, he seems a couple years away from being a year away.
Not great, considering that this is still only year two, or is this year three for Kiat? I feel like he's been there for a while.
Dude, you could honestly tell me a bunch of things with Yusuf Kiat, and I'd believe it. You could tell me he's 35 years old and also has, like, a job as a tax attorney, and I'd buy that. So it might be year two, it might be year three. Last year was age me, like, 5 years in Michigan basketball years.
Yeah, I saw him stocking the shelves at a Sam's Club. So, yeah, he definitely has a job that's not in basketball. But, yeah, exactly. I'm with you. I was aged last season having to watch that. Let's keep it moving, sir. Northwestern. I wanted to touch on this as we look around the Big Ten a little bit. David Braun, who did not know who that was coming into the season, had to, like, look him up to figure out who he was, is 5-5. Northwestern was on death's doorstep. We had written them off. We had said that they were the worst team in the Big Ten after the scandal with Pat Fitzgerald and what happened there. A much worse scandal than what happened at Michigan that just doesn't get discussed at all, by the way, but I digress. Should David Braun be considered for coach of the year at 5-5, this Northwestern team?
100%. I think what he's doing has been outstanding, especially when you consider the talent factor at Northwestern, or the talent void more accurately. So he came to Northwestern from North Dakota State, one of the FCS powerhouses. He'd been there for 3 years as their DC and safeties coach. And that's kind of what Northwestern had been lacking. So after 2020, Fitzgerald lost his longtime defensive coordinator, kind of lost that identity. And it looks like Braun was kind of bringing that back, like going to be the defensive coordinator here, help Fitzgerald regain their momentum in the West. But Braun didn't even need Fitzgerald to do that. I mean, this is outstanding what he's doing. I mean, you're tied for second in the Big Ten West. Granted, it is a dumpster fire. But if you can get this team to a bowl game in your first year as a head coach, something they haven't been to in a few years, like hadn't won a game on North American soil in 2 years, and now you're going to take him to a bowl, that's outstanding. I definitely think he deserves consideration.
I would think so too. And if he's deserving of consideration for coach of the year, I would have to imagine that the interim tag gets lifted and that is their next coach moving forward. Would you agree? Yeah, I would imagine. So I don't know who you're going to go out and get at Northwestern. That's going to be some splashy hire. That's going to be better than what you've already homegrown here. And, you know, I've mentioned this, you kind of laughed it off to me about Northwestern and it being not a great job. That stadium that they're building looks legit and it's in Chicago. Like, it looks really nice. So I'm excited to see what this program could theoretically become.
I am too. Northwestern is a fantastic journalism school. It's just a fantastic university. And now the athletics are kind of catching up. So it's like they could jump a few teams here. They have an opportunity to do so. Let me read you David Braun's opening two sentences on his Wikipedia page. Tell me this doesn't just sound made up from like a Mad Lib. Braun is from Wales, Wisconsin, where he attended Kettle Moraine High School. Braun began his coaching career as a graduate assistant at Winona State University, his alma mater, in 2008.
I've never heard of any of those places.
Wales, Wisconsin? It was like, all right, noun. All right, Wales.
Yeah, I did not know any of those were places. So props to David Braun. You want to talk about rising from obscurity?
Wales, Wisconsin. I bet it's got a population of under 2,000. Yeah, no, sorry, 2,800. I stand corrected.
Wow, the booming metropolis of Wales catches strays for no reason. We're going to find out. We have like 11 listeners from Wales. Be like, hey, hang on now. We actually have a great fudge shop in the center of town.
You don't talk about what we can do during sockeye season, okay? We bring home the bacon, bring home the fish here.
Wales, Wisconsin. All right, well, that's enough time on Wales, Wisconsin. The Big Ten West is even more obscure and nonsensical than anything happening in David Braun's background. Northwestern still has a real shot at this. They are in conference 3-4. I think Iowa sealed it, didn't they?
They can do no worse than tie.
They can do no worse than tie. That's a shame. Man, I really thought this was going to come down to a battle of 5-5 teams because there are, count it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 teams in the Big Ten West that are 5-5. I mean, this is a statistically impressive case of mid. I mean, we've never seen this much mid gathered together.
It's insane, man. So Iowa can do no less than tie at the top. Their last two games are home for Illinois at Nebraska. You figure they should win both, but also trying to predict what happens in the Big Ten West and in the Mid Ten West is just an exercise in futility. There's no sense in doing it because chaos is always on the horizon.
Yeah, chaos is a ladder, but in this case, it's like a plateau. It's a podium. You can
always climb down.
You could kind of just stay where you're at, or you could go down a step. That's about it. It is. I've never seen anything like the middle of the Big Ten West, which is most of the conference. There's just nobody that stands out other than Northwestern, who we talked about, because they shouldn't have been able to do what they were able to do. I guess Nebraska, good for them being at 5-5, and certainly a better year than they've had under Scott Frost, but also coming off a pretty ugly loss to Maryland last week. So one that we'll talk about here as we switch our focus over into this Maryland preview shortly. But yeah, it's just been extremely ugly there. I mean, disappointments, definitely Wisconsin and Illinois, as well as Minnesota, teams that we thought would be in competition here, teams that we were a little bit higher on. I think we knew Minnesota would take a step back, but Wisconsin, yeah, really a disappointment.
Wisconsin's the disappointment, probably just in the whole conference, really. I would say they're right up there in that, because everyone thought with Fickell coming in, with the pieces he had returning, bringing in Tanner Mordecai, oh, they're going to do crazy things. And it's like, no, are they? They're just 5-5. They played Ohio State pretty tough for a little bit, but they got bullied by Washington State, a team that everybody is now bullying. So that was alarming. So I'm with you in agreement. They're definitely the disappointment here. But Illinois, man, Brett Bielema really kind of turning the ship around, because early in this season, it looked very grim for them. And you can still get Illinois to a bowl game in a down year. I think that speaks to the resurgence he's brought to that team. And not just smoke meats. The man also knows ball.
Man knows ribs. He knows oxtail. He knows his way around a brisket. And he knows how to keep his team engaged in fighting, despite the fact that it's not been the season that they were hoping for in Illinois. But yeah, the Big Ten West, I just enjoy talking about its futility. Let's look around college football at large really quick. You asked me this question, and I'm not sure we talked about it on the pod last week, but who should be the Heisman Trophy winner right now?
It's such a weird year. It's kind of like the RG3 year. It's kind of like, say like that Lamar Jackson type of season as well, where it's like, I think the best player's not on one of the best teams. I hate when the award cops out and just does that. I think of the Mark Ingram 2009 year, when I really think Toby Gerhart had a better case. I think it's Jaden Daniels. I think he's been the most outstanding player week in and week out. And I was kind of skeptical of him coming into the season. He was just really never my type of quarterback last year with his inconsistencies, but he seems to have all of those ironed out. And man, he's electric to watch, both running and as a passer, brings so much to this offense, sprays the ball around the field. I think if he has a good showing in these final 2 weeks, I think he should be a lock to win it.
That's my pick as well. If nothing else, he should definitely be there in New York, even if they do have a third loss. I just think that he's the best player that I've seen. He's the most electric. And these teams that are right up at the top, there's just nobody that's really standing out on them, unless you want to go with Penix from Washington. But you and I were just alarmed by that Arizona State game, and that really put us off of them. And I think there's a loss coming for Washington here at some point. I was kind of hoping that Utah was able to pull it last week in a really good game. They were unable to get that one done, but I'm with you that for now it is Jaden Daniels. What else did you want to talk about from around college football? I know Alabama was a team that caught both of our eyes and seems to have turned a corner, and it should be considered a contender.
You and I talked about this, man. Saban hasn't won less than 11 games since 2010. Like, there's a reason for that. Like, he's going to get the most out of this. I mean, early in the year, think of the South Florida game or the Texas loss. Like, they just looked directionless, and leave it to him to find out a way to get the ship going in the right direction. They're a threat to win 11, 12 games again, potentially even sneak in the playoff if they can win the SEC. Very impressed with what they're doing. But one thing I want to touch on here around college football is chaos on the horizon, because I think this is one of our last good weeks of potential upsets to like kind of upset the established order.
Yeah, I'm with you. The one that you had pointed out was Oregon State, who finishes their schedule with just two really consequential games and in Corvallis nonetheless. So Oregon State, correct me if I'm wrong here, but it's Washington and then Oregon to finish it, correct?
Yeah, it's Washington and Corvallis, and then it's at Outzen Stadium.
At Outzen, yeah. So Oregon State's going to have a role to play here down the stretch. A really good Oregon State team that I'm kind of find myself believing in and now pulling for, because I think we really want some chaos here towards the end. Alabama and Georgia look to be on a collision course, so we're still going to have that game to look forward to. Yeah, man. I mean, it's got to happen like this week. I think that if we're going to see the chaos that we're hoping to see and see some things shake up, because there's going to be some really good teams that are left out of this top four.
Yeah, I mean, Iowa State welcomes Texas to Ames on the 12-year anniversary of upsetting Oklahoma State at home. So that one, another game to watch. Georgia goes at Tennessee against a Tennessee team I don't like, but Neyland Stadium, it can be raucous. It can bring some upsets. It can do some things there. So maybe they could at least be challenged. I don't see any way they lose that game, but perhaps maybe a letdown performance following the Ole Miss beatdown. So another game to keep an eye on. And again, I think around the rest of college football, it's trap game season. It's Iowa 2016 season. Is Michigan going to trip up for win 1,000 at Maryland? Is Ohio State going to do something wacky and struggle against Minnesota? So I think that's another thing to keep an eye on. But like, there is very big upset potential, but most of it's on the West Coast.
I'm with you, brother. Sticking around college football, Jimbo Fisher has been let go by Texas A&M. And Jimbo Fisher will be paid $26,300 per day over the next 8 years to not be the coach at Texas A&M.
That rules.
Just a fascinating use of funds. Well done by Texas A&M. How many libraries, how many scholarships could that pay for? It's egregious.
But sorry to cut you off. How weird is it that he gets fired after a 51-10 victory over Mississippi State? He and Mississippi State's coach both got let go. I don't know if that's ever happened during the season before.
The optics of it are strange. Obviously, this was a decision that had already been made, and my guess is they wanted to get a jump start on the potential open head coaches that would be out there, but it is strange, no doubt about it. Chip Kelly also let go from UCLA, or likely to be let go from UCLA. Hasn't officially happened yet.
It's weird.
My question is this: big picture, with the Mel Tucker and Jimbo Fisher, I think disaster is a fair word as far as disastrous hiring coaches with the amount of money that was given and then the returns. Do you think that that's enough to maybe cause a big picture shift in how we're paying coaches? I think that maybe we could see things calm down a little bit with how much we're paying coaches, particularly unproven coaches. Jim Harbaugh might still get 70 plus million and should get 70 plus million dollars because he's proven. But I'm just wondering if you're a little more cautious throwing out 90 million dollars to a coach based on limited successes.
I think
Fisher did win a national championship, but one.
Just one. It's interesting, man. I wanted to say, yes, you're going to see it, but one, with as crazy as inflation is, I think we're just going to see numbers keep getting kicked up there. And two, it's hard to gauge what a university or what boosters with like deep pockets are going to do when they get just a whiff of success. Like, you know what that 2021 season meant to Michigan State? They're just like, Paul, it's going to happen forever. Or it's like Jimbo Fisher during the COVID year had some success. So they're all just like celebrating already. Like, oh, we're going to do big things. Like, keep it going. Like, I want to say cooler heads will prevail. But once you get a little taste of success, I think you're more willing to just part with some dollars. I'm like, come on, act like that money's hurting Texas A&M. Like, that oil money is deep and never going to run out, and they just can't sit there and watch Texas have all this success while they just kind of toil around in mediocrity.
Yeah, I'm sure they're doing just fine. They'll just probably take it out on a library or like an engineering building that won't get redone. Like, you don't need a roof in order to teach mathematics. There's nothing that says you need it.
How much would you love to get fired? They're like, Jared, we're going to pay you $26,000 every day for the next 7 years. You good with that?
Yeah, I'd probably be fine with 26 G's a day. Just right now, kicked up, got drinks poolside and clearing 26 G's. My goodness.
Like, Andy, you want to pod today? I don't have much going on. Just got to count some money. That's about it.
And I mean, props for him for not whacking it on a computer screen and being able to pocket the rest of the bag. So congrats.
Congrats on keeping it in your pants. This is the money you get. Like, that's all you have you to do. It. Just keep it in your pants. Earn this money.
I do that every day on a Zoom call, and I'm not making $26,000 a day.
Where's my money? You know, I've been waiting for that. I've been not tugging it on company time all my life. Like, come on now.
All right. Speaking of tugging it on company time, let's talk about Maryland. I don't really... Michigan's got Maryland this week. They are coming off a 13-10 win and a real barn burner against Nebraska. Congrats on the Terps, who are 6-4 this year. This was my team that I predicted. I thought that they would get to 8 wins. You called me out on that. I was wrong, and I will not be coming to bat for Maryland. I will definitely never go to bat for a Josh Gattis-coached offense again. And they've got some serious issues. Not quite the team that they were that last year, but let's talk about this 6-4 Maryland team that we will be facing this weekend in Maryland.
So Maryland last year was one of those, like, finally, the culmination season where a lot of things came together, and especially on the offensive line. And that's where they had a lot of success, was running the football. They could just like do it, set up to his brother and just open things up in the offense. I'm just going to call him that because it's essentially just more degrading. Oh, you're to his brother. Okay. So they opened things up, and they had a really good rushing attack last year with Roman Hemby and Antoine Littleton. And while both running backs are back, the offensive line is just kind of piecemealed together after losing several veterans, trying to figure things out. And that was never more evident than when they played Penn State. Against Penn State, Maryland had negative 49 yards rushing. Negative 49. Roman Hemby in that game rushed for, carried the ball 5 times for no yards. Antoine Littleton carried it once for negative 3. And they just completely abandoned it from that point. As we know, Josh Gattis likes to do, he will get away from the run and just try to catch up through the air. So this team is just kind of falling apart inside out, and teams that can take advantage of them in the trenches, like Michigan will, just seem to overwhelm them throughout the game.
So this team is still, despite not being as good on offense and losing all those offensive linemen, not really having a consistent rushing attack, they're 4th in scoring in the Big Ten right now. They're averaging 28.9 yards per game, just behind Ohio State, Penn State, and Michigan, obviously. So this is still an offense that you look at and you're like, okay, they can do some stuff, but where were they really putting up all of those points? They beat Indiana 44-17. They hung 31 on Michigan State. They hung 42 on Virginia. But against a decent Nebraska defense, you only managed 13. You lose 51-15 to Penn State. You lose to Northwestern 33-27. That certainly raises some red flags, in particular about their defense, that a Northwestern team is able to hang 33 on you. So they've gotten a little worse since last year. Taulia Tagovailoa has not taken a leap. I thought maybe that's where it would be coming from. I think he kind of just is what he is at this point. And I don't know how much of that is the Josh Gattis move. I don't know how much of that stunted his development. Obviously, we are not Gattis believers here on this podcast, but it didn't help. Let's just say that. It definitely didn't help the situation. So I just am not really a believer in their offense or their defense. Defensively, they are towards the upper half of the Big Ten. I think they're right in between Northwestern and Maryland, which is not great, to be honest. So I don't really think that this is going to be much of a challenge for Michigan, regardless of who's coaching. Are there any players on their offense that we should be watching out for? I know you mentioned Tua's little brother, Taulia, having a down year, but a historically good quarterback at Maryland, definitely like one of their better players to ever come through the program statistically.
Yeah, it's a player where you can't just look at his box score, because you look at his box score, you see 65% completion percentage, pretty good, 22 touchdowns, 8 picks. It's like, okay, that seems good, but his biggest problem is a lot's thrust on his plate, because number one, they're throwing the ball 38 times a game. That's way too many. They don't have the balance there, and he is still doing what he's been doing for the last 2 years, which is he's throwing interceptions at the worst times of games. So it's like in a one-score game, a two-score game, they need to score, throws a pick. Same thing happened to Michigan last year. Same thing happened to them this year against Ohio State, where a game they were in like for a half. I mean, they played Ohio State tough, and I think that was kind of their swinging doors moment of the season. It was like, can they get here? Can they beat them? Can they pull the upset? No, they couldn't even cover the spread. Like, it was just too much. They got overwhelmed, and from there, it's kind of been spiraling. On the offense, they do some cool things at receiver, but I really like their running backs a lot. Like, I think they're going to be neutralized because of their offensive line, but Roman Hemby is a really good running back. Antoine Littleton is a load, just a massive, big body type of back. So those are probably my two favorite players, despite just the limitations they have up front.
Yeah, and Colby McDonald averaging the most per carry of that group, averaging 6.5 yards per carry, granted on fewer attempts. Yeah. Littleton and Hemby are going to get the bulk of that. Taulia Tagovailoa also as a runner, effective, but he's taken 21 sacks this season for minus 150 yards, goes to speak to the downgrading that's happened on that offensive line and hasn't really picked up throughout the season. So what about defensively? Who are you looking at? Who do you got your eyes on in this Maryland defense?
So defensively, a guy to note is Kellen Wyatt. He's the team leader in tackles for loss and sacks. So he's a linebacker. So they like to do some things with movement, move him around, create some mismatches. And this game, I love where it falls on the schedule because I think it's a perfect warm-up for Ohio State because they're going to use some linebackers. They're going to try to blitz from the right side, overwhelm the Barnhart side, see if there's really a deficiency there or if that was just a one-off on the road in Happy Valley. So I think, one, that's going to be tested. And two, just to go back to the offense really quick, you're going to face that heavy passing attack, and that's going to get you ready for Kyle McCord, Marvin Harrison Jr., and a better passing attack next week at Ohio State. But defensively, yeah, expect him to use movement, try to create some mismatches, overwhelm the right side of the offensive line, blitz JJ from his throwing side, and force him to roll the wrong direction and just kind of create some havoc and turnovers.
Yeah, I agree. Good call out on the pass rusher. Also, Tarheeb Still, defensive back, currently sitting with 5 interceptions on the season. So he's found a way to get his hands on the ball quite a bit. We'll see if JJ comes out throwing a little bit more on this one. My guess is you're going to see a slightly more balanced attack against Maryland than you saw at Penn State. You know, we've got a week to really wrap our heads around the game plan and how we want to attack this Maryland defense. And I think that it will be a more balanced attack, but couple playmakers on their defense. Any other big picture thoughts, sir? And then we'll get into players of the game and predictions.
Yeah, this team has lost 6 fumbles this year as well. So I think turnovers can be a big thing and can kind of get this game to just be more lopsided than it could be after a quarter. So maybe it's close. Maryland's fired up. It's senior day. You talked about Tua's little brother has been one of the most pivotal Maryland football players in recent history with his career. So it's like, maybe it's a big game. He talked about before the season, like, Michigan game has really stuck with me. I guess it didn't stick with him against Northwestern, but we'll see if he has one thing left in the pocket here, maybe to try to pull the upset, spoil the season for Michigan. So again, look for them to empty everything in this one. They're going to throw trick plays, do this and that. Josh Gattis revenge game, quote unquote. So just a lot of things they're going to try to do early in this one. So perhaps before it stabilizes.
Well, look, this is win number 1,000 exactly on the table for Michigan. So, I mean, Josh Gattis would absolutely love to spoil that, I'm sure. And hopefully, I mean, fingers crossed, Jim Harbaugh should be on the sideline for win number 1,000. If there's any sense of cosmic justice, he will be, because he belongs there for this. And I want him to be able to celebrate with his guys. I want that win to be attached to Jim Harbaugh. We'll know. Even if it's Sharon Moore, it will always be a Jim Harbaugh era win to us, but yeah, that is not how it will go down in the book. So really hope the judge does the right thing on Friday and Harbaugh can be there, because I think this is going to be win number 1,000, barring just some absolute chaos and Taulia playing out of his mind. So that being said, sir, who are your players to watch, players of the game, and your score prediction?
Players to watch offensively, Carson Barnhart. Let's see the right tackle spot get shored up, get some confidence moving. Let's see if that was just a one-off. Like, never seen a deficiency like that before. So maybe it was a tell, maybe it was the crowd noise, maybe it was snap count. I don't know what it was, but I'd love to see it cleaned up on the road before the biggest game of the season. Defensively, got to watch Will Johnson. Let's keep it moving. I want to see him just keep. I mean, he hit his stride the last couple weeks. I want to see it just keep building up all that momentum leading into Marvin Harrison Jr. Because it's like he has a I don't want to say a shaky game against Tua's little brother. Not going to feel great about that matchup the following week. So that's a guy to keep an eye on. Man of the match, offensively, Roman Wilson. Let's see a big one. Let's see him get fed again. I think there's going to be a concerted effort to get him the ball after last week's lack of targets, lack of involvement. So I think it's going to be a guy to watch. You could easily go with JJ here, but for Maryland, let's keep it different. Go Roman Wilson there. Defensively, let's go Derek Moore. I think it's going to be somebody in the front. They're going to abuse this offensive line. Last week against Penn State, I went back and rewatched it, and I just focused on the line. One, go back and just watch Penn State's right guard every play. He is holding and hugging and tugging. I love good offensive line play, but like on the Drew Aller rushing touchdown late in the first half, watch what he does to Mason Graham. Just watch. And it's ridiculous. So that's another guy to keep an eye on to have a big bounce back one. But Derek Moore in that game had a play where he confused Fashanu and had a free rush at Aller that forced him to get rid of the ball prematurely. I think we could see a big Derek Moore one in this one. Just a couple sacks, maybe a TFL. So that's a name to watch. Score prediction, I think Michigan handles it pretty clearly. But I will say something bold just because, you know, why not be bold? For the second straight year, Maryland scores more points against Michigan than Ohio State.
Ooh, okay. So what's the prediction then?
Final score of this one's going to be Michigan 45, Maryland 16.
Oh, I can't wait for your Ohio State prediction. Under 16 for Ohio State.
They scored 23 with CJ Stroud at home.
We are going to talk long and hard about that game next week, but that's a podcast for another time.
That's adjusting great the stuff. Britches right there.
I mean, I'm already adjusting the britches, brother. That's great stuff by you there. Like a lot of what you said, Barnhart, 100%. That was going to be my guy to watch. So I'll mix it up there and go players to watch. Let's go with, how about AJ Barner? Let's go AJ Barner. I was feeling a tight end game. Might even still go with Loveland as my player of the game. We'll see. That's a problem for future me. But Barner as a blocker has just gone leaps and bounds above what I was expecting from him this year. Couple that with the fact that he's a more than reliable pass catching option. I think that he's just an incredible player that's going to start showing up on NFL radars. And he's getting better as the season goes along. So betting on the progression there. On defense, let's stick with my guy. Let's go with Braden McGregor, another guy that's running out of opportunities to put tape out there for NFL scouts. It wouldn't be his final away game because we got a Big Ten championship and some bowl games coming up. Hey. But Braden McGregor, just senior, been with this team, played a lot of snaps there. I want to see what he can do in this final stretch run. I'm definitely going to predict a big game from him against Ohio State, but I think it starts this week against Maryland. For a lot of the things that you said against Derek Moore, I think that our edges are starting to come into form, and Braden McGregor can really, really set the edge and can do more than that, I think. Maybe a couple batted down balls in this one. My players of the game, let's not get too crazy here. Let's go with JJ. Was going to go with one of the receiving threats, but you stole that from me, going Roman Wilson. Colston Loveland was another guy that I thought about here, but let's stick with JJ. The Heisman window is not closed. It is all but closed. It is just a peep sliver of light coming through. So if he wants to exploit that, the Maryland game's a great place to start. And then you follow that up with a great Ohio State game and you're right back in the conversation. So let's go JJ there. And on defense, let's not get cute. It's Mason Graham. You could also go Kenneth Grant here after the freak show performance last week, but I think it's going to be somebody up front. I think Mason Graham's been the best player. Your prediction, 45-16. I love it. I think Michigan, I'm going to go with the prediction that Harbaugh does not play, which breaks my heart to do. Don't even like it, or does not coach, excuse me. So I'm going to go 38-13 Michigan, pretty much the exact same score that I predicted for Penn State. I think that's what we will rattle off against Maryland, but see it similarly to you. They're outclassed. I don't think they're going to be able to get much going on offense, and that will be their detriment. Meanwhile, Michigan, not a bounce back game, but a bounce back game for their passing attack, which I think will have a good day.
I love that. It's a great tune-up game against a team that's just good enough that you have to take them seriously. Like, it's not like Purdue or somebody like that that's just at the bottom of the Big Ten. Like, this is a middle tier team that's just dangerous enough to ruin your day. And I think that's what keeps him focused, keeps him locked in. You didn't come this far just to come this far. That's one of the biggest things here. It's like, got to take care of business. You damn well know you can win this game without throwing a forward pass. So I think that's comforting as well. And a lot of people have still been, I've been seeing the pushback for that. And like, you've heard all the basic explanations of, you know, establish your dominance, do this. I think one thing people need to keep in mind is that Michigan's rushing attack is so refined that if one player makes a mistake, it could be a touchdown. So you're kind of betting on your fundamentals and your discipline against an opponent. So if one guy's out of place, it's a touchdown. And we saw that with Chop Robinson. So when Michigan feels confident running the ball like that, and they're clipping them off at 5 yards a carry and getting diverse, and one guy messes up, show's over. So I love to see the dominance. I think we're going to see it again here, although the passing attack will get back on track against the Terrapins.
They don't even have to mess up. You get one-on-one on the outside with Blake Corum or Donovan Edwards, and it's you versus them. Like, they got a lot of ways they can make you miss. They got a lot of ways they can run through you. There's a lot that they can do. So even when you play it perfectly, it does not mean you're going to stop this Michigan rushing offense. So yeah, having that in your back pocket, knowing worst case scenario, we'll just run the ball 47 times. That's a nice little arrow to have in the quiver.
Get the mammoth personnel out there. Maybe a sleeper thing to watch in this game is, do they go out with mammoth at the goal line and throw a touchdown pass to Trent A. Jones just to give Ohio State something else to think about? Just something out there.
Do you save that for Ohio State?
Well, it's like, I don't know if Trent A. can catch. So
no idea.
Test it against Maryland, maybe, just to give him something to think about. See what you can do there. But no, man, this should be win number 1,000. No team has done this in the NFL and college football. Something to celebrate. This is a big one, and I hope we have Harbaugh for it.
Same here, brother. Same here. We're working on a couple different interviews to hopefully come on and celebrate, commemorate the occasion of win number 1,000. And God, next time we talk, brother, it's going to be for Ohio State week. So begin adjusting the britches. Maybe if you need to order some new britches, go ahead and get on Amazon now so that they're here with ample time. Anything else from you, brother, before we close this one out?
No, man, we're on the precipice of it. I mean, Ohio State's next week. We're going to be in Ann Arbor for this game. So if you are around, reach out, let us know. Let's get together, grab a beer, let's adjust the britches together and get it done.
It's not gay. It's just two men celebrating their strength, just adjusting britches together. It's fine. All right, brother, that's going to do it. Please make sure that you like, share, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, whether that's Spotify, Apple Music, or wherever. Leave us a 5-star review if you haven't already. I'm Jared. That's Andy. This is Out of the Blue. We'd like to remind you that wherever you go, go blue.
What are you laughing at?
Laffy Taffy. They have a funny joke on every wrapper, and I love how fruity they are. Banana's my favorite. Want one?
Sure. Mmm, so smooth and creamy.
I like to eat them after school and after dinner and after...
Whenever you need a good LOL?
Yeah! So, here's the joke. What do clouds wear under their shorts?
Thunderpants. That is good.
Laffy Taffy. Deliciously funny. Head to LaffyTaffy.com to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Beyond Natural Pet Food. Beyond Pet Food helps me care for what matters, my pets and my world. They help me nourish my pets with high-quality natural ingredients, like wild-caught salmon and organic free-range chicken. Beyond also has responsible sourcing practices and a long-term partnership with the Nature Conservancy. Beyond Pet Food, your pet, your world. Learn more at beyondpetfood.com.